Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Yo, what up? Jake and Tierney ready to crank it out on this Friday around the country. A little Masters Friday, but we got a lot of other stuff going on. Hopefully everybody's doing well as we set it up, as always, from our studio here. It's the Rocket Mortgage Studio. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. So the Masters is going. We got a pretty interesting stuff out of the shoot with LeVar Arrington. An odd take on Bill Belichick, maybe coming from an unexpected person, I think probably a better way to frame it.
Yeah.
I don't know that anybody thought that LeVar Arrington would have the hottest take of Belichick in the last year or so, but he does. And Atiki's former teammate, we'll get into that. Draymond and KD chopping it up on a podcast, weighing in on the state of the game. We'll hit that as well. Two pieces of advice from Sharp Tierney.
All right. Go ahead.
If you're going to make on-air bets, make sure that you win. Okay, number one. And number two, make sure that your partner pays up promptly, which mine definitely does. Absolutely. A little habiki. The doorbell rang today. Going to be a good Saturday night in the backyard at the Tierney house there, Teak.
A little Japanese whiskey coming your way. Like I told you in the text message, I was going to send it last night after I knew I'd lost the bet. But I guess because of COVID, delivery services, they make use, like the recipient set it up as opposed to me being able to just say, hey, show up at the door.
Yep.
So you had to schedule it, and that's why I got there today instead of last night, like 5 hours after I lost our bet.
I'm pumped, man. I'm not going to open it up tonight. Tomorrow, nice. I was telling you guys on the Slack chain, we've got a busy day tomorrow, 8:30 T-ball practice. First opening week for flag football at 5. But then after that, daddy's going to be a little
distance. Sitting on the couch.
No, in the yard.
In the yard with some habiki. By the way, the bet I lost was I thought the A's, who had a hellacious start to their schedule, starting with the Houston Astros for 4, then the Dodgers for 3, and then the Astros again for 3 more. So I was like, dude, they're going 0-10. Mm-hmm. They ended up beating the Dodgers. The night. So
a sharp tyranny, it extends to every facet
of
gambling. So that'll be fun. Thank you very much, buddy. I did not expect the good stuff. Well, actually, you know what? From you, I kind of did. I think you pay it promptly. I didn't think you'd come anything but correct. So I will sample, and I will report on the samplings.
Please.
I anticipate that they will be very favorable.
And if it's good, then I'll get my own.
Exactly. All right. So let's at least give you a quick snapshot of the Masters. You're driving around Friday. Don't assume you guys are watching like we are. The day two storylines first, and then we'll get into the stuff with Bill Belichick, which is really interesting. Augusta is playing a lot easier today.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of player movement. There's been some real leaderboard volatility, which is fun. Justin Rose has scuffled today, though he stabilized his round so far on the back nine. He had 4 bogeys on the front. Remember, he went to bed as the leader at -7. He's been all over the yard today. A different round for Justin Rose. Jordan Spieth has been solid. He's in red. Justin Thomas has been making a move. He's at -5 today. Rory, not a whole lot there. And speaking of Rory, we'll get with our buddy Bryce, with Brandel DeChambeau. I did this yesterday, too. Bryson DeChambeau and Brandel Chamblee. I keep doing that. Brandel Chamblee is going to join us today from Augusta. Teak, he said some really poignant things on the post-round coverage last night on the Golf Channel that I caught live about Rory's swing. And you know there's no better analytical consumer of the swing than our buddy Chamblee. So we'll get him on coming up in about 30 minutes or so, and we'll give you a real sense of what's happening at the Masters.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to that. Bryson is actually making a little bit of a surge, but not just to get to even. He's still at +1, finished yesterday at +4?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, +4 yesterday. Now he's +1, so 3 under on the day. I don't think he's going to be able to get within striking distance today. Maybe he will tomorrow, but He's obviously the big gun that everybody's looking at. Just don't know how he's going to perform because he hasn't really done great in that new physique at the Masters. It's a different type of tournament.
It's not a good course for him. And it's something else that Brandel and Justin Leonard were talking about. Again, we'll do all this with Brandel coming up. But it's not really a good course for him. He was flying greens with wedges. Mm-hmm. The one thing, if he can kind of finish strong today, you know, put up a, I don't know, I'm just throwing out a number, 66, 67 tomorrow.
Yep.
If he can, because it's a new driver head. If he could get that thing cranked up by Sunday, you never know what he can do. You don't rule him out, but we'll see. Projected cut line plus +3 in case anybody was wondering. So there we go. All right. Let's play this. LeVar Arrington. Now, you play with LeVar. We've had him on the show a lot. It's been a while, but we used to have him on a lot. Smart guy, thoughtful guy. How would you describe? So I want people that maybe aren't familiar with LeVar Arrington's either intellect or personality.
Yeah.
Because I think I don't want this to. I want you to frame
what
he's like before I play this.
LeVar is not a hothead. He's not looking for hot takes. He's not one of those guys just trying to be splashy to be splashy. He's actually very introspective for someone who was a maniac on the football field.
Yeah.
You guys remember, if you can remember back far enough, at Penn State, he was that linebacker that was he was probably the first one that I saw do this multiple times, which was sneak up to the line of scrimmage and then dive over the center.
The leap
over the center to get to the quarterback when quarterbacks were still under center. And, be successful at it. And, in fact, he actually did it in the NFL, which is amazing. To think about the athleticism it takes to get to that point and to do it in the NFL as well. When he came to us, BT, he had a long stint with Washington at the time. And remember, I always tell you how, you know, he told me the difference between the Washington, now football team, and the Giants. He was like, you know, I feel like when I'm talking to the ball boys with the Giants, I'm talking to a future owner. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so, like, just to be thoughtful like that and distinguish between two organizations, it's a little thing, but it was actually a profound thing that's always stuck with me. That's the kind of guy that LeVar is.
Okay, I knew that because we've had him on and I've heard you talk about him, obviously, but I wanted everybody who, you know, there's a lot of hot take artists out there. When you actually see the headline, basically, you know, Bill Belichick on the hot seat, I mean, now, okay, things get a little loony, get a little wacky when we're at that point already, but I just want to preface all that with a little scout report on LeVar Arrington, how he comports himself, which is professional and with reason and logic. So with that being said, let's hear LeVar about Bill Belichick and how the pressure is about to get ramped up.
Having the type of season that they had last year can make you rethink a whole lot of things that you did in the past. That seat is warm for Bill Belichick. And that might sound crazy for some people. He has to have a good season this year. And you know why? Because there are whispers. It was Tom. It was always Tom. It couldn't have been anything else but Tom. And Bill Belichick has to show before he gets too far away from Tom Brady leaving that it was not Tom Brady. It was, in fact, and indeed, the system of what Bill Belichick built in New England.
Let me tell you something. I think a lot of people, if they don't really get into the depth of what he said and they just see the snapshot, that's nonsensical. Stop. They might not even read it. When you listen to that and you look at Bill Belichick's career with the Browns before Tom Brady and obviously that lengthy 20-year run with Tom Brady with the Pats, and I don't mean, you know, this year necessarily. And to be fair, I don't even think that LeVar is implying that if he doesn't win, that he's going to get fired. It's more about perception.
Yeah.
How we will perceive Bill Belichick, we will rightly or wrongly, Teak, if they go 7-9 this year and Cam's average, and if they draft somebody and he's not that, whatever. If they go 8-8, you know, now that's 2 years removed from Tom. That's two subpar seasons. It's a radical departure from what they were for a long time. And at that juncture, you will have people, and I might be in that camp as well because I might be there right now, quite frankly, beginning to just ever so slowly and slightly strip away
a little
layer of the greatness that is Bill Belichick. If you can't do it with anybody other than Tom Brady, we got to have a conversation.
But here's the truth of this of the situation surrounding Belichick and Tom Brady. Tom Brady, I mean, I'm trying to think if there was one of those Super Bowls in New England, not the one in Tampa, where yes, I know he won the Super Bowl MVPs, but he was just like dominant. Like he kicked butt and was like the most amazing player we had ever seen. You know, like an all
like a Montana, like yeah, a Montana yeah, game like, against Cincinnati. Like,
exactly, like I an all time Super Bowl performance,
or even Phil Simms.
Yeah, exactly. Phil Simms had two incompletions and one of them was a drop.
That's
in
right.
The Super Bowl, right?
Who dropped it? Was it Bavaro? No, it wasn't Bavaro.
No, I think it was McConkey.
McConkey?
Yeah, I think it was. I'm maybe like maligning we're just throwing the names wrong, out. The wrong person, but. I know it was a wide receiver. I don't think it was Bavaro. But think about all of the Tom Brady Super Bowls. Most of them have been won very close to the vest, uh-huh. right? One score games against the Panthers. It was one score game against the Rams. It was a one score game against the Rams the second time a couple years ago. But that was a defensive masterpiece. It was ugly as
horrendous.
Hell, but it was a defensive masterpiece, which is why. When you look back at the history of the New England Patriots, you have to credit the scheme as much as you do Tom Brady. Yes, he doesn't make mistakes in the clutch. Mm-hmm. Yes, when you need to go, I don't know, 60 yards like he did in that one against the Rams, which was just dinking and dunking. I mean, it was on replay somewhere. And I forgot that last drive where he set up that Adam Vinatieri field goal. It was just like, Tom drops back. He chucks it down to the running back. Tom drops back. He, you know, little out route. Jumped. Oh, he hits the running back again. And he goes 60 yards. Like, he's meticulous with it and precise. But it's nothing special. It's nothing that you're saying, man, my quarterback couldn't have done that. It was just the execution of it, which mm-hmm. was why it was so great. And then the rest of the game is won by scheme and great defense.
I don't dispute that.
And so to me, that's coaching. That's preparation. So yeah. I hear what LeVar Arrington is saying. But for as long as I've not known, because I don't know Bill Belichick personally, but played against him, obviously, and respected him from afar as an opponent and now as an analyst, when you look at their teams, they are prepared for every eventuality on every single moment. Situational football, we talk about it all the time. Mm-hmm. You can't put that all on Tom Brady. Now, you can put the expectation that Tom Brady sets for everybody on Tom Brady, but you can't put the minutia on Tom Brady. That's why I slightly disagree. I feel like maybe he has a little point, but I can't say that he's on the hot seat.
Well, again, hot seat is
perceptually.
Perceptual. But that's the wrong term. I think
you're right. You're right.
Everything that LeVar said was well positioned. Mm-hmm. I think that's the wrong term, though, because it gives the wrong implication there. Yeah. To me,
like he's going
to
get fired.
Yeah. You know, I've always said anytime somebody implies that there's pressure, like, you know, Daniel Jones, all right, we'll mm-hmm. take your quarterback this year, much like my quarterback a year ago. If Sam Darnold didn't play well last year, and he didn't for various mm-hmm. reasons, but he didn't, then there was pressure going into last year because yep. there was real tangible.
It's a third year. You got to know, man.
Stuff where if he doesn't play well, they're going to probably move on.
Yep.
Same with Daniel Jones this year. If Daniel Jones doesn't play well, there's probably a good chance the Giants will move on. There's other coaches right now that are going into, whether it's Nagy with the Chicago Bears, mm-hmm. his GM in Chicago, other coaches as well. If they don't have a winning seat, maybe Zimmer with the Minnesota Vikings. I'm just throwing names out, but those two fit for sure. If those coaches don't perform well, you know, and they're kind of lackluster, 6-10, 7-9, even 8-8 in the Vikings or the Bears case. You know what? They're gone. That's yep. pressure. That is palpable pressure where something will change if you don't do X, Y, or Z. Belichick's not getting fired no matter what. But this needs to be reiterated. 6-10, mm-hmm. 7-9, 7-9, 11-5. 5-11 mm-hmm. without Tom Brady in Cleveland.
Yep.
Then he goes to the Patriots without Brady, 5-11. Then they go on this long run. We know what transpired, 6 championships. Mm-hmm. The first year without Tom Brady, 7-9. And really one of the ugliest offenses that I've ever seen.
Yeah,
and I've watched the Jets my whole life.
Yeah, but whose fault? I mean, that's not his
fault. But
it
doesn't matter. If Belichick's receiving the credit for the championships,
but
you've got to look at the big dog when you're not winning.
But is he always receiving all of the credit? And that's the question
yes.
you have to ask.
I think
so.
He has.
I think it's for the last at least decade and a half. So give Tom 5 years of just kind of being along for the ride because the team was well constructed and very well coached. Yeah. And then Tom started becoming the man, you know what I mean? And so give Tom like 15 of those 19 seasons and kind of as the head. But before that, it was Bill Belichick. And so when you start to mold those together, the entirety of their tenure together, it was Bill Belichick because he's got his quarterback. And it's why every other team craves and is like so thirsty for a quarterback. Like, give me the guy. It's why they do stupid things and move up Ryan Pace to go draft Mitch Trubisky at number two. We believe he's going to be our next Tom Brady, right? And they do stupid things because they're enamored and fall in love with quarterbacks. I think the credit was shared in New England. And now that Tom is not there anymore for this last season, Bill Belichick's adjusting and this offense is adjusting. Because how do you replace a legend? It's just hard.
True, but they haven't shown the ability to adjust yet. And to LeVar Arrington's point, if they don't adjust.
One year, man.
Well, I understand that. But LeVar said this year, he kind of gave him a pass for last year. Mm-hmm. LeVar Arrington directly stated, you know, if the malaise of 2020 seeps into 2021, mm-hmm. that's where all of his points were derived from. He kind of gave him a pass for last year.
Yeah.
And by the way, as much as we talk about, and I hear you, to, you know, the 5 years where there was training wheels on for Brady before he came the best of all time, mm-hmm. and you've got to be able to delineate those various periods in Patriot lore. And as we watched it in real time, we understand what transpired. But
yeah.
I think you're also giving people a lot of credit. Most people generally are lazy, and they lump into, you know, broad totalities. And I just did it, but I did it for a reason. Bill Belichick without Tom Brady with the Browns and last year, and now whatever remains of his Patriots tenure. I think at the very least, even if you don't believe or subscribe to what LeVar Arrington said, I don't know anybody that can refute that as not at least interesting. It's a pretty good thought by Arrington.
Yes, it is an interesting thought, LeVar Arrington, speaking on First Things First on FS1, by the way. Interesting, yes. Is there some reality behind it, perceptually, for people?
I think so.
Absolutely. Will it change how we forever view Bill Belichick? Absolutely not.
What if he never, and you know, this is a huge if, but what if he coaches 4 more years with the Pats, and they languish. I know it's a big hypothetical. I'm curious how you would answer this.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, the average record is 8-8. Mm-hmm. Maybe they make a singular wild card. Maybe they get bounced. Maybe they win a game. But
they were a game away from making the wild card last year.
But they didn't.
I know.
But they didn't. And if they don't make it, like if there's 3 or 4 more years that kind of mirror last year, that doesn't change your opinion at all?
In real time, yes. Historically, absolutely not.
So he's still the greatest coach of all time.
There's no doubt about it.
There's just a different contextualization to it.
In today's NFL, where things change as fast as they change, it's really hard to be dominant. And he was dominant for 2 decades. Like, you can't take that away. You just can't.
All right. I could buy that last part. I'm not trying to take it away. I'm just trying to uncover what I thought was a real piece of truth, possible truth, from Arrington. That was good stuff.
That was good, by the way.
I like it. Now, Teague's been, let's get to this coming up next. Teague's been telling us now for about 2 weeks that the Niners, he thinks they're taking Trey Lance. I don't think that's happening. I think they're nuts to take Mac Jones. We weren't on TV yesterday, but I said, please stop hitting me with this lunacy that Mac Jones is better than Justin Fields. It's some of the dumbest stuff I've ever heard.
Who are you going with then?
If I'm going number 3, I'm taking Justin Fields if I'm the 49ers. However, there's an NFC team right now, apparently, that is getting ready to maybe scoot up the old draft board to get Trey Lance. His stock is starting to soar.
See, you're sleeping on Trey Lance over here.
All right. I just said it's not the Niners. We'll get to that coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. You know, crank it up, D-Cell. Give it a little love. Give it a lot of love. 50 years old. DMX, 50 years old. Passed away. Lost him. And, been fighting the good fight for about 6 or 7 days here, Teague. Obviously, an uphill battle. You knew it was pretty ominous, but he has officially passed away. So sad, very sad.
Very, very sad. He was real. He was rugged.
Yeah.
That was X going to give it to you. Rough Riders anthem. Tracy was pumping all day this morning, or this afternoon, early this afternoon when we found out. Yeah, it's a sad moment for those who miss, who remember that moment in rap history. After, it was right after that Biggie Tupac stuff was coming to an end. Both of them, I think, had passed away. And there was just like this void. This is pre-Jay-Z, and DMX just kind of, he hit it, and it was raw, it was rugged. It had that so, raggly voice.
Oh,
and,
man. I mean, coming at you, coming at you hard, coming at you with force. And, I mean, his music's always going to resonate. That's the one thing about artists and actors, entertainers, even when they pass on, their life's work is there for everybody to sample and for new generations to enjoy. Obviously, sad, but and condolence to all his fans and certainly his family, more importantly. We'll drop in some more DMX stuff throughout the day here on the show. Wanted to just bump a little something, show some early respect. All right, Teak, you've been showing probably more respect for Trey Lance than anybody, who, by the way, is getting ready for a second pro day.
Yeah, what is all this? I guess they have to because they didn't have a combine.
You know.
Everybody's having second pro days.
Selling himself.
Not that anybody's going to run or do the drills again at their pro day, because that's usually what the pro day is for. You do the combine. It's a high-pressure situation. There's like hundreds of athletes, thousands of athletes there, and all of the teams and the scouts and executives – sometimes you mess up, you have a bad day, or you say something stupid. The pro day is the makeup for what could have happened poorly at the combine. Now, I guess you got to have two pro days consistent since there was no combine, which makes sense. To be honest.
Unless you've told me for a long time, I think now it's far more refined. Players know what to expect, but a lot of times back in the day, 40 times that were subpar. You know, a lot of it is you're rigid, you're tense, you're tight, you don't get out of the blocks quickly, you lose 0.2 seconds, you're kind of going uphill the rest of the way. So a chance to rectify that stuff, and we'll see. He's a really intriguing prospect. I know that you say he's going to the Niners at 3. I don't see it. This news about Washington being really interested, to me, that's far more plausible. You got Ryan Fitzpatrick, you got Taylor Heineke, who showed a little gumption against the Bucks in that playoff game. We all remember that. You know, he had some good energy, but I don't know that you hinge your future to that. Certainly don't hinge it to Ryan Fitzpatrick. You know, with this team right now, you might be able to satisfy both ends of the equation, whether it's Heineke or Fitzpatrick. You know, with that defense, and obviously picked up Samuel, you have McLaurin, you've got a pretty good running attack, you got a decent O-line, you have a good draft, Washington's going to be good.
Yeah, they got a good defense too, by the way.
That's what I'm saying. No, that was the first thing I said. I said good defense, and then I ran through the offense. Defense is certainly better than the offense, and the offense is okay. Defense is really good. But with Fitzpatrick, you can win you can win games now, but if you can find a way to get Lance on your roster, you can win games now, but also fortify the future. That's intriguing to me.
It is.
Washington.
It is. I mean, it puts Ryan Fitzpatrick back in the same situation that he's been in seemingly every single year of his last 5 years.
Yeah.
Where he's kind of the also guy for the up and coming star, like he was with Tua and would be in this case with Trey Lance.
And Jameis Winston, too.
And then Jameis Winston, who was a suspension, and he kind of needed to stabilize him with Bruce Arians. And so it's actually the perfect role for Fitz because he handles it well. And ultimately, whenever it's time for him to go to the bench, it never becomes an issue, right? Last year, where was he last year? Why am I forgetting?
Miami.
Miami. Last year in Miami, it could have been like a disaster if he would have said, look, we're winning and I'm playing. Why in the heck am I not playing right now? Like that could have derailed the whole team and created a divided locker room. And it wasn't. He handled it perfectly. And so whoever they decide to bring in, because I don't think they're done, Washington, with quarterback, I think Ryan Fitzpatrick is the perfect guy for that role. Now, the question for Washington, because I know Washington really is enamored with Trey Lance, and they probably felt like they were okay at 19 earlier on in the draft process, right? When the season just ended, he's only played in 16 games, or really 17 games, if you count the one game this year. And, you know, it's like, okay, we like him, but what do we really know about him? You know, we're not going to take him top 10. He's probably going to fall to, you know, 12 or 13 or something. From 19 to 12 or 13, you can get there. From 19 to 3, I'm not so sure you can do that.
Well, that's if you really believe that. I mean, I know you do, but that's if the Niners are going to really take him. I don't think the Niners are taking him. So you might have to get to four because it seems like the foul, which is still, to your point, that's quite the jump to go from 19 to four. Whether it's 19 to three, 19 to four, it's almost, it's basically the same deal.
That's right.
You know, I don't know. I don't know what they think of guys like Kyle Trask and maybe some others that, you know, that I don't see Trask going really 19, but
no.
I also didn't see Mac Jones just blossoming into this. You know, this player that everybody's seeming, I mean, I'm not enamored with him. I mean, you're somewhat, you like him.
Because he can play right away. Like, when I look at Mac Jones, I am not worried one bit about him being confused on the NFL level.
Okay.
Now, I may be utterly wrong about that, but the way that he processes what's happening in front of him, you saw it in college, right? When teams would try to mix up defenses, it was a chance for him to exploit them. And he always took advantage of it. He always found the right matchup. He knew where coverage was rotating to or away from. Now, obviously, that helped because it didn't matter whether he was throwing to Devontae Smith or John Mechie III or Jalen Waddle when he was still healthy. They got a pretty good tight end in Billingsley as well. So whenever, like, if you messed up and left someone man coverage, you were getting beat. You know what I mean? Because Mac Jones was going to find that guy and make a good throw. And so I just believe he can play right away. Like, I don't know if he's going to be a superstar.
Then I can't take him at three. If you're not going to be a superstar, there's no way I can take you at three.
I've never said take him at three. Thought that. In fact, when we had this conversation 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, when he started really rising, you and I both agreed he's probably like a late first, upper second round type talent.
That's right. Right?
Because we know what his limitations are athletically and everything else. But people are enamored with success. Right. And he had the ultimate level of success in college and he doesn't turn the ball over. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at him, you're like, God, he's got a pedigree. And, you know, I know Alabama didn't used to be a quarterback school, but it is now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's won. And so he knows how to play with stars. Let's get Mac Jones. And that's why I think he's put in that upper echelon of quarterbacks right now.
I'd feel a lot better. I know you and I have gone back and forth on this, and the conversation's far from over because we both need to see a lot more from Tua before we officially declare him one thing or the other here.
Yep.
I'd feel a lot better about Mac Jones, even though their skill sets are very different. Obviously, Tua's a better athlete. It's smaller, et cetera. There's a lot of stark differences. But if Tua really flashed with Miami instead of being a check down guy and 5.5 yards a pop. And
which is what he wasn't in college, by the way.
I know. But that's what I worry about because all the gash plays that you get at Alabama, are they a product of the fact that your 11 guys are just exponentially better than the other team's 11 guys, which is something I've always thought.
I mean,
you have great offensive linemen. You got great running backs. You got burners who were going in the first round.
Great scheme.
Who the hell can't score that way?
Yeah, great scheme. Sarkisian was great at drawing up those things, as Lane Kiffin was before him.
Yep.
I mean, there's something to it because you're getting simple defenses in college or simpler defenses in college. It's easy to exploit them. In the NFL, you're getting a bunch of different stuff that doesn't look like anything you've ever seen before because it's combo. It's one thing on one side, it's another on the other side. And so you get confused pretty easily. That's a good point, BT, to make. I'm still giving Tua, just to jump off on him for a second, I'm still giving him some benefit of the doubt because he had no time, right, to learn what an NFL football system looks like. None. Because of the pandemic, he didn't play at all. I mean, they didn't really have a preseason. He didn't play in the preseason, and he didn't really have a chance to get on the field until the season had already started. So,
and he had a huge surgery.
Exactly.
No, I'm giving him a chance too.
I want to see him play in the preseason, to be honest with you.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I want to see him, like, let's experiment. If you make mistakes, who cares? Like, I want to see that Tua.
Uh-huh.
And if he's okay, I'll believe more in him. If I see him really falter, then that's when I'm going to have some worries about Tua down in Miami.
Okay, we're going to get the update here from Mac. Just to give you a heads up, hour two, Trevor Bauer, little interesting situation with Major League Baseball, investigating legal substances on some of the balls that he was throwing, took him out of the game, so we'll get to that. Of course, he shot back on social media.
Of course he did.
Pretty interesting chop-up session yesterday on a podcast between Durant and Draymond Green. A couple of old heads right now kind of, you know, really lamenting the state of the game, the softness of the younger player right now. We'll get to that. That was pretty interesting, too. But coming up after Axe Update, Brandel Chambly, our buddy checks in from Augusta, lets us know what's up. Axe Update now, and then we've got Brandel on the other end. Here's Ack. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network Masters. We're going to get with our buddy Brandel Chambly, who is on the course, hooking us up. We'll get with him in a minute. First, though, it is a Friday, which means you could send us a good question here, and we'll answer it for you. We call it Ask the Pros. Drop us a tweet at CBS Sports Radio. That's at CBS Sports Radio, hashtag Ask the Pros, and make sure you stick around and listen later on. Tiki and I will answer the best one. So get them in. Could be about the Masters. Could be about some of the NFL stuff we hit before with Belichick or Washington's apparent affinity for Trey Lance at the quarterback spot. Whatever it is, just get it in. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts, all your car care needs. Guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. The professional parts people are at O'Reilly Auto Parts. All right. You know he's a personal favorite of the show. Mm-hmm. Every time there's the big event, we drop him a text, and every single time he hooks us up, which means you're about to get some of the best golf intel you could possibly get in the business, because Brandel Chambly is back on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Brandel, what's happening, buddy? How you doing?
I tell you what, it doesn't get much better than this. It's springtime, back at the Masters. We got some crowds out here. We got some good weather. I think this is about as good as golf gets, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you fellas.
I appreciate it, man. There's no doubt. And I was texting you earlier today. I heard Brandel say something last night with Justin Leonard, of course. Who, by the way, I got to tell you, Brandel, Justin Leonard, we've had him on as well. He has really adjusted nicely to TV. Now the personality is officially out. He always had the stuff in his mind, but now he's kind of relaxing and letting it flow. I think he's really gotten pretty good on TV.
I agree. I look at him about five times a day, and I think, I didn't know you were funny.
Right? Exactly.
I didn't know you were funny. Where did this come from?
Yep.
You know, he's very good. He's part of this business is spending, you know, an inordinate amount of time in close confines to people. And so when the hang is good also,
yeah,
it's like it's a wonderful blessing. So obviously we grew up in the same sort of area and went to UT, so we have a lot in common. But
yeah,
beyond that, he's funny as hell, and he's sharp. So I love doing TV with him.
You guys have good chemistry. So you were really expanding on Rory McIlroy's plight, and I was watching in bed because I caught the replay, and I was like, man, that's some pretty deep stuff. I would never notice that because I just wouldn't. But you said on TV last night that you have never seen Rory McIlroy take so many bad swings. Now, if that's not the exact verbiage, correct me, but that was certainly the gist of your point. What did you see from Rory? What's going on?
You know, look, I have a sweet spot for the guy. I mean, not only is he maybe the best guy in golf right now and one of the best quotes, he's got, you know, arguably the most beautiful golf swing in the game when it's on. And I have a file of pretty much every year he's ever played golf from the time he was a kid till now in my phone. And I look at it all the time. So I'm familiar with sort of three or four different swings that he's had, but I've just never seen him swing as poorly as he swung yesterday. I've never seen him swing anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
The club was coming inside. It was steep. It was across the line. And then when he transitioned, it got under the plane, and he was having to pop up out of it. And so he couldn't even get his right shoulder up to the ball. Two-way miss, big misses, wrongs, out of position. And you could tell, I mean, just the expression on his face, you could go back in and see every shot they hit.
Mm-hmm.
You go to yesterday's round, you go to the sixth hole, watch him hit a shot, look at the expression on his face. He couldn't have been more frustrated with what he was doing. And, you know, look, coming in here, I was curious to see what his swing was going to look like. Arguably the best athlete in the game, working with arguably the best teacher in the world. I thought they had about 10 days to concoct something, sort of get this thing, this train back on the rails. And he was completely unorganized. And I didn't think he was going to play great this week. I didn't pick him to win.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really pick him to contend, but I didn't think he'd hit it that bad.
Yeah. Is this because of what we kind of presume a lot of these golfers are thinking about it, and some of them are actually doing, chasing distance and obviously trying to follow what Bryson DeChambeau is doing, who had a heck of a day today, actually. 67, he's now one under, so he's a little bit more in contention. But is this because they're kind of swinging too hard, or is this something else?
Yeah, no. Even Rory has admitted as much. He said he was chasing distance. But, you know, there's a very specific way that Bryson DeChambeau has maximized the principles of power.
Mm.
And it's not just going out there and trying to swing hard. It's a movement pattern, a very specific and nuanced movement pattern. where you got to move back and get your right hip way behind you and your hands really high and then collapse them, right? And then you got to drop down, you got to extend and rotate at the same time. I mean, it's very nuanced. And to go out there and try to do it without the understanding of the footprint and all the principles of power that Bryson has, that not very many people in this world of professional golf have put the time in to understand. And I think that's Rory's mistake. And to try to get himself out of that, he reached out to Pete Cowan. His lifelong coach, Michael Bannon, hasn't been able to travel because of the pandemic. So he reaches out to Pete Cowan. Pete Cowan comes in. Clearly, he's got different principles about the golf swing, and he tried to incorporate them in Rory's move. And look, I mean, it may take some time. Maybe it'll work out. But, you know, the first iteration of these thoughts, it wasn't a success.
So it's over to Brandel Chambly from the Golf Channel. Of course, he's with us here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. For both of our money, the most intelligent analyst out there. Just, I don't know anybody that loves the golf swing like Brandel does. You are. He just told us he's got photos of Rory McIlroy's swing, every iteration on his phone. I heard you say that on TV last night, too. I also heard you say this on TV about DeChambeau, where it's basically, you know, it's not a good fit for his game, this particular piece of real estate known as Augusta. And while he did bounce back, as Tiki mentioned before, in round two, you know, I wonder, historically, has there been a great player, right? And right now he is a great player that just never seemed to play well at a course where there was a lot of majors. I believe his best finish is as an amateur, I think 24th or so at Augusta. He has not played well at all. Any commonality throughout history that you can point to that kind of connects the thread to DeChambeau just not seeing or feeling good on this course?
You know, there is, but I'd have to go to tennis. I mean, it reminded me a little bit of Yvonne Lindell at Wimbledon, you know, for whatever reason. Even though, you know, people who know tennis far better than I do will argue that he was a fabulous grass court player, but for whatever reason, he wasn't able to play his best. Obviously, he ran into some great grass court players and wasn't able to win, but he reached out to a coach, Tony Roach, and tried to change his game a little bit to become and finally win at Wimbledon to complete the career Grand Slam, because I think only 8 players have done that in tennis. So in that regard, yes, I can find an analogy in tennis. In golf, and I'm looking at the Masters, there's just never been anybody quite like Bryson come along. There's never been anybody this scientifically oriented, who is this linear thinking, who's been this successful. There's been some who've attempted it. Mac O'Grady was one. Eons ago, there was a fellow by the name of John Schley, Bobby Clampett, and they were successful golfers, but they were not, you know, in the upper echelon of the game. Mm-hmm. You know, I think their pursuit for perfection did them in. You know, they didn't have the tools to satisfy their scientific mind. Bryson does. He's able to connect dots. But ultimately, you know, you can get out on the driving range and you can have FlightScope or TrackMan, these forensic devices. You can look at them. They're going to spit numbers out for you. But when you get out at Augusta National, it's the most abstract piece of land in golf, and you've got a severely downhill lie, ball well below your feet, and then you've got to, you know, cut it up off of that lie to an elevated green with winds gusting in there. None of that computes. No mind can compass all that. Mm-hmm. You have to feel it, and you have to trust it, and that makes his head explode because he likes to know exactly the parameters that are in front of him and have it computed before he ever makes a swing. You'll hear him go back through, you know, he and his caddy will go back and forth, back and forth. And if they don't know, he gets very agitated.
Yeah.
So it's just not a great fit for him. And yes, he did play well today, but as we speak, I think he's in about 14th place.
Yeah.
The last 24 years, the average position of the eventual winner after 36 holes at the Masters is in third place. Third.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, mm-hmm. 5 of the last 7 have held the 36-hole lead. After 36 holes at the Masters, the golf course is pretty much divined out all of those players who are in control of their nerves and touch and have the technical proficiencies or skills that week to dominate. And then they hardly ever recede. So could he win? Sure. But nobody in the last 24 years beyond the 12th spot has won. Only one player outside the top 10 in the last 24 years has won. Only one. And
what
that's
a, what a great stat. Yeah, what a great stat, Teak.
Yeah, wow. He'd have to climb at least six right now to catch Justin Rose. And that's likely not, you know, in the cards as you were just laying out. You know, let's talk about the course today. It feels like it's given lower numbers. Justin Rose didn't benefit from that for whatever reason, but the course seemed softer today. Mm-hmm. Just listened to some of the broadcasters talk. Did they wet it or was humidity a little bit higher? It played significantly easier today than it did yesterday. What do we expect for the weekend?
Well, yeah, yesterday, you know, there was no cloud cover, and it got baked out. Today, the clouds came in, kept the humidity down, so the golf course lost some of its fire. Tomorrow's a 65% chance of rain, I think I looked at. So one of the reasons why the golf course was so dry yesterday, I think, is because they're looking for the perfect sort of golf course to give the players on Sunday. They knew rain was forecasted, so they needed to have it on the edge on Thursday because it's a little softer today and it'll probably be substantially softer tomorrow. So Saturday's always called the moving day. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it will be probably a pretty good day to move. The chances are, you know, the players that are in first, second, third, and fourth are going to take advantage of that as well.
Brandel, give us 30 seconds on this if you can. It's Brandel Chambly starting to wrap it up. He's at Augusta. I certainly appreciate the time. He's with us here on Tiki and Tierney. So we all know Jordan Spieth's, you know, 3-4 year plight where he, I don't know if he lost his swing, but he kind of lost his game, that's for sure. And we know what's kind of swallowed up Justin Thomas the last couple of months, some personal grief, the slur that he uttered. When you teed up in front of people, what do you think is tougher? Like what Jordan Spieth was trying to come back from and apparently has, or what Justin Thomas has been battling, which is obviously different than a loose golf swing. What's tougher?
That is a great question. It really is. Tremendous question. Because
thank you,
one
Brandel.
Deals with the technical difficulties of trying to recapture what you had, and the other deals with a huge embarrassment and humiliation publicly. Mm-hmm. I think anybody that saw Justin Thomas's apology and has seen him behave since then would agree that it was sincere and that he's contrite. And I think to whatever extent he needed to get over that psychological hurdle, he did it a lot faster than Jordan Spieth has been able to turn around his game.
Yeah, he really has. He looked pretty good at Valero. Looks pretty good so far here. Listen, awesome catching up. I might drop you a text over the weekend if I have a question, but your work here is done. Thanks a lot, man.
Appreciate you, Brandon.
Always a pleasure talking to both of you. Thank
you
so
got
much.
It.
Tell
yes,
Justin
yeah,
we
no,
said hello.
No doubt. Oh, yeah, that's right. Tell
yeah.
Justin we said hi.
I did an enthusiasm event with Justin last week.
I saw that.
And he was great. Now, he really is a he is coming. You're right. He's coming to his own.
Yeah.
As an analyst, and he thought Dustin Johnson would have. I maybe forced him into saying Dustin Johnson. I was like, pick me a winner.
You pushed him down a line.
Yeah, exactly. Now yeah. Dustin Johnson is +4. He's probably nowhere near contention, and probably he's not. So it's going to be someone else, obviously, but. It's interesting, the leaderboard, because Spieth is up there.
And yes, he is.
He was the one we were kind of keeping an eye on simply mm-hmm. because of what happened last week and the fact that he's found his game a little bit. But the weekend will tell.
How great is Chambly, though? Seriously.
He's so smart.
He is so smart. The way he just weaves everything in.
That's right.
It's like poetic. I could listen to him talk about golf rep. I love him on TV. I love him on social media. People are going to start thinking I'm weird the way I love the guy. I think he's great. I'm sorry. All right, Trevor Bauer calls out Major League Baseball. All right, illegal substances, investigations. Ruh-roh, got a little issue in baseball. Hit that next hour, too.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.